Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The Neighborhood. New episode tonight. 8 Eastern and Pacific. 7 Central on CBS. Go to cbs.com/shows/the-neighborhood or go to facebook.com/the-neighborhood-CBS for interviews, trailers, behind-the-scenes clips. Star and executive producer, Cedric the Entertainer. Entertainer is right in his name, people. Come on. Max Greenfield plays Dave Johnson, a super friendly guy who wants to be pals with his new neighbor, Calvin Butler. That's Cedric the Entertainer, but Calvin's not interested. Loosely based on executive producer Jim Reynolds' experience moving into a traditionally black L.A. neighborhood. The Neighborhood, Cedric the Entertainer, stars CBS tonight, 8 Eastern and Pacific, 7 Central, only on CBS.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Craig Fitzsimmons, plus a round of the Rotten Tomatoes game. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, plus a review of Fahrenheit 11.9 in Hooray for Baldywood. And now, he likes drinking so much. On Football Sunday, two of the layers in his seven-layer dip are alcohol. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Good day, Gina Grant.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Tiss, tiss. That's not funny.
I will tell you guys, thanks to Simply Safe.
Hey.
Go to simplysafe.com/Adam. Castrol Edge. I don't know what that was.
I thought it was me.
Could have been Dawson. Castrol Edge, titanium strong for maximum energy and performance. LifeLock. Go to lifelock.com. Enter Adam. All right. So I was just yelling out in the kitchenette area. Because, you guys can help me.
You're doing your short warm up, you know, your routine.
Yeah. I was,
pleasantries.
I was working it out, which is, I was
shadow
just
boxing.
Walking out of the studio and I found the, Anchor Steam cap.
Chris tries so hard.
Yeah. A cap for an Anchor Steam beer sitting where Gina's sitting. And argument for all the guys who come in here and do shows when I'm gone and drink beer is please don't let me know you're in my studio drinking beer. You can drink as much beer as you want in my studio. When I show up the next day, I don't want to know you were doing it.
Leave no evidence.
It's a pretty confined area.
It's a console.
One would argue.
It's finite, for sure.
It's about 16 to 18 inches deep. It's about 9 linear feet. There's not a whole lot of floor space. So a beer bottle, a beer can, a beer cap, it's pretty noticeable. And the reason I know it's noticeable is because I notice it when I walk into the studio. Much like the David Lee Roth, Van Halen writer, my beef isn't that you're drinking beer in my studio at night. My beef is that it is impossible for you to do anything about it so that I wouldn't find evidence about it, even though I yell about it all the time. It's not the drinking of the beer. It's that you're incapable of the easiest fucking thing on the planet.
It's following
and we
overall
get into it all the time and you do sweeps and you do everything, but it can't be done. And it also lets me know you don't care. You don't care. You don't care. And the reason I know you don't care is because there's a beer bottle or a beer cap. Now, you say you care. Everyone says they care. When you accuse someone of not caring, they go, oh, no, I care. No, you don't. No, you don't. And I'll tell you why. If I said, I will give you $10,000 if you can make it a whole year without a beer cap or a beer bottle or any reminder. It would be done and done. Mm-hmm. And if I said, you will pay me $1,000 if I ever come in here again and find, it would be done and done. So we all know it's doable. And we all know you say you care, but you're coming from a world where you get to just say you care and then hide behind saying you care. You don't care. If you did care, you would correct it. It's the easiest thing in the world. There's something wrong. There's something wrong with you. And then I walked out and I found the coffee mug that was half full with coffee from the night before.
That's
sitting next
mug.
To the sink. I found a half full coffee mug on the table on the way in, and then I found another one by the sink.
Gosh.
Everyone here cares. Everyone here cares, and it's not their coffee mug. Nobody ever picks up the coffee mug and throws it in the sink, wanting to avoid this thing they say they care about. And they want to avoid this. Now, as I laugh about it, but when people go, you're coming up on your 10-year anniversary of podcasting, I go, I'm coming up on my 10-year anniversary of fucking begging people to rinse their coffee mug. That's the way I look at it. The podcast, that's a distant second to begging people I employ, begging them to do something with the coffee mug, not always theirs. Sometimes it takes a hero.
Sometimes it
takes a hero to walk past a ceramic mug that's 9 inches away from a fucking sink, stop and look at it and go, well, that's not my mug. And then in slow motion, start
with
walking toward the sink with purpose.
Yeah.
And a gleam in their eye, you know what I mean? And in slow motion say, you know what? You know what? That's not my coffee mug. But the guy whose name should be on the building, but isn't technically.
Number nine.
That guy has brought this up so many times that, you know what? I'm going to be a hero.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Poor Chris.
And I'm going to do this.
Unsung hero.
Unsung hero. Now, what it is I'm going to fire somebody, and I'm going to hire this guy, Peter Conley.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm going to fire somebody, I don't want to fire somebody. What you tell me what the next move is in the coffee mug rinse department. It's we're going on 10 years. I brought it up conservatively 86 times.
Conservatively.
We're talking 2018?
I know it feels like 2,000 times. Yeah. What is my next move? The next move isn't begging everyone to rinse out a coffee mug.
No, there's two directions to go. One is the daycare direction. We're well down because you are drinking out of a mug with your picture on it.
Mm-hmm.
With your picture on it.
Right. Well, that was year five of me
trying. That's what I'm saying. We're well down that road.
That was the point. Mine's gone mysteriously.
The other is, the road of consequences.
All right. So somebody needs to get fired.
Wait, are Gina and I eligible for this? Someone's going to get fired?
Well, let me state my case. I got to say, sitting in this room a foot and a half from you when this happens has a huge effect on me. I don't know if you've noticed, but this year, for some reason, I became super clumsy. I don't know if I have like walleye vision, but I just started knocking cups over. And I mean, it's happened like three times this year. So a couple months ago, I couldn't stop. I don't know why. I was gesturing wildly. I don't know what was wrong with me. So a couple months ago, I stated this, that I will no longer be allowed to have open containers in here. So that's why I always bring a water bottle, because I don't want to be on the chopping block.
I like the self-imposed rules.
Yeah, I've been doing this for a while because I can't be trusted. I kept knocking over glasses.
All right. So I don't know.
I love this weakest link competition.
Somebody has to get fired because
of strength.
I can't go another decade begging people to rinse coffee mugs. Now, it doesn't really matter whose coffee mug it is, because each time I do my 10 minutes on, could we please rinse the goddamn coffee mugs? And then the report back to me is, hey, boss, that wasn't my mug. Oh. My answer is, you've been in the building for 2 hours and the mug is sitting next to the sink half full of coffee. Yeah. You went to the sink for something else. We should all, I am going to deputize and have deputized everyone to rinse said coffee mugs. So
Now, you know, this is the difference between sort of manslaughter and murder one. Murder one is you've left your coffee mug once again half filled near the sink. But manslaughter is that you've been in the building for 3,000 of these conversations. You've walked past the mug 10 times and you've never,
you chose to do nothing, never
rinse it out. I like to pride myself on being the last person to show up to this building. So people usually have a little head start.
Lead time.
But I think at this point, I'm just going to have to fire somebody on this mug, just sort of not necessarily because they're connected directly to the mug, but just somebody needs to go so that people understand I'm serious about this mug thing that I've been screaming about for 10 years.
No, that's fair.
Is that thing fair?
100% fair.
I think it should be a mug-based competition.
I was
Brian, we rarely agree 100% on things, and I think in years past, I may be accused of being a little harsh or overreacting or whatever. But Brian says 100% fair.
I'm explosive.
What do you think about that?
In as much as it pertains to show content, this is a fantastic idea. Dave's of Thunder, hosted by Dave Damashek and Dave Feeney on this very network, have proposed a ordinary guide decathlon, you know, like events for ordinary dudes. We should do something similar, like have a 10, you know, thing competition, a best dressed competition, on and on and on. And the loser of that competition faces the axe.
Again, a studio sweep competition.
Yeah, this is not, maybe, this is not pertaining to the mug per se, but it is a way to sort of send a message.
Mm-hmm.
No one's safe.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm exempt.
Do we have other? Do I have other modalities to end the coffee mug ring dry
you
coffee
could,
madness?
You could continue down the daycare route, but that just seems absurd.
What's the daycare route?
I mean, just the you have the pictures on the mug, which could be seen as silly, but then you're like a thing where you're assigned a mug, or
we did that twice.
Or, hey, it's 12 o'clock. It's mug time. Everyone, you know what? Look for mugs to clean. You could continue down that absurd route where you're nannying people, but that, again, that's a waste of, that's, as Sonny would say, that's just
mm-hmm.
a waste of his time. What are you talking about?
All right.
It's just a waste of my time.
So I think I got to fire somebody over this mug thing.
Oh, God.
Well,
I know.
It's 10 years in the making. Some people have been here shorter, obviously. You know, some people have been here a couple of years.
Is seniority part of the equation?
I don't want to bring your heritage into this. You're Mexican. That's your business. I'm not going to. I wouldn't hire those people.
Understood.
All right, but let's not have everything take a turn.
That was my mistake.
I want the person fired to retain Garagos for a lawsuit against unlawful termination.
Well, what do we do?
I'm willing to bet that Dr. Drew was responsible for 20% of this, and for him to be exempt, it's unfair.
Dr. Drew may very well be responsible for 20% of the rogue half-filled mugs, but the part where they're always out and everyone walks past them and never buses them.
Yeah.
I found one at the beginning of the week that was like on the back shelf there. What was that, Maxipata?
When we got back from the cruise.
Yeah, or I think it was this week. But either way, I found one on the shelf in the back. Yeah. I found it, to be fair, it was a little bit behind something, but not so, like, it's not like, well, using night vision and a drone and my heat sink. No, I walk in and I go, there's a mug. It's the same shelf that everyone else walked past 30 times. So nobody's interested in it. Again, caring, saying you care is not really caring. Oh, I'm looking at the one I took a picture of. It. That was in the back. It was just dried up at the bottom.
Yeah.
Here's a potential solution that doesn't, if you want to avoid the firing route.
I don't really want to avoid it. I just want to fire somebody because I don't want to deal with this anymore. And everyone's sort of equally guilty because everyone is here and passes all the mugs every day and never rinses them out.
Here's my proposed solution. And I realize it's not without its flaws. That said, this is an alternative to firing someone. Someone needs to have added to their job description studio sweeper. And I don't just mean these four walls. I mean, in this building, and it's an unpleasant job, but And I think everyone who's worked at a place with more than 10 people, we've all, you know, KLSX, we've all been there. The fridge is a mess. There's always a sign like, clean out the fridge. Like, there's just a lack of accountability once you get past five people or three.
So, yeah, where does the buck stop?
Someone needs to have added to the job description your studio sweeper. Every hour, walk around. If you see a mug, grab it, rinse it. Whatever that, you know, that thing is that falls under that umbrella. Again, I realize with its flaws, you shouldn't have to do that with adults, but this might be a way to avoid having to fire someone.
But listen to this guy, Peter Conley.
How do we know him?
Skill, studio sweeping.
He's called into the show. He's called into Ace on the House a few times. Mm-hmm. Dear Adam, we spoke on the episode of Ace on the House that aired on Saturday, August 11th, 2018, entitled, I Trust My Own Opinion. While we were talking, you said you'd like to pluck me up and pluck up this young Peter. I will be studying in London this fall. Yes,
You recall saying that? I'm making that up. Do you recall?
Yes, I remember talking to him. I think he worked in aerospace and blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
But I have handed you this resume because I would love to come work for you upon my return. You've heard part of my story, and this resume supports what you said about my work ethic. Now listen to the end. I won't do your best. Sorry.
Take two.
I won't do my best.
Oh, I know.
This is young Peter. I won't do your best. I'll do the best.
The best. Wow. That's good.
Sincerely, Peter Connell.
Signed, Dylan Wren.
All right, so somebody's got to go.
We got some because waiting in the
I mean, we could talk about the mug thing again, but I everyone in this building has experienced 25 tantrums. I'm saying the guys who've been here only
I
2 years.
Guess the new guys, maybe, yeah.
The new year guys have experienced 25 tantrums about the mug. Dawson, yes. You're nodding your head.
In order to fire somebody, I think you need to take a note from El Chapo and the Sinaloan cartel. When someone was caught stealing, they dragged him out in front of everybody and put a couple of bullets in his head.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that mug half full in the sink, who's ever in the vicinity, mm-hmm. whoever sees it, whoever has eyes on it, boom, everybody get out here now. You're fine.
All hands on deck.
Yes.
Point made. You will never have to do it again.
Speaking of Garagus, I think he definitely would be retained for that.
Wrongful termination suit.
All right. Let me tell you about Simply Safe. Then we'll get Fitz Dog on the phone and we'll play. What are we playing? Are we going to play Round of Rotten Tomatoes? All right. Let's all think because someone's got to go. Simply. Well, you guys think it's funny. I don't think it's funny. I'm going to fire somebody. And
no,
then if it goes on again, I'm going to fire somebody else because I as the boss have a simple wish. And that's not to have these rings spot welded around cups. I made myself pretty clear pretty early and pretty often. And you guys have spoken, which is you are not interested in this wish. Or there's something wrong with you. Because whether it be the beer bottle or the beer cap on the console, these are easily remedied.
That's true.
Very easily remedied. One could even have a policy of after a night of drinking beer at the boss's console, we just go ahead and take a look, give it a sweep.
Studio sweeper.
Either the sweep is not being done or there's something exquisitely flawed in you that you don't see bright colored objects on a red background during the sweep.
Shiny.
Either way.
Maybe we should all play for someone for Rotten Tomatoes.
You'd make you'd make horrible bass.
There's a line behind me.
Let me tell you about... cue up. Let me tell you about Simply Safe. Here's why I'm a big fan of Simply Safe. Home security. It's prepared for everything. If a storm takes out your power, your phone line gets cut, keypad gets destroyed, Simply Safe is ready. They will get you the help you need. Maybe you don't need to be ready for every worst case scenario, but Simply Safe is, and that's why they're great. It's always ready, $14.99 a month, no contracts, no hidden fees. I recommend Simply Safe to everyone I know. I have it. Dawson has it. Gina has it now. Mm-hmm. Garagus has it. Everyone has it. Peel and stick. Up and running in under an hour. And batteries last up to 10 years. No drilling, no pulling wires, none of that. I recommend SimpliSafe to everyone I know. Go to SimpliSafe.com/Adam. That's SimpliSafe, two I's in there. SimpliSafe.com/Adam. All right. We got Fitzdog, and we're going to play the game with Fitzdog. He's on line one. Line one. Let's see. Should I pot him up? Fitzdog.
What's up, buddy?
What's happening, man?
Well, I'm just trying to deal with the Kavanaugh thing. He keeps coming over my house asking for beer. And you know I don't drink.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, that's tough.
Oh, man. I still like you, though, Fitzdog. I really do.
The only reason I wish I still drank is so that I could have some of that mangria. That's it.
I love that. Mm. I love the plug. Speaking of plugs, Providence, Rhode Island, Comedy Connection. That is next Friday and Saturday, October 19th and 20th. San Fran, Punchline, Thursday, November 8th through Saturday the 10th. Denver Comedy Works. That's a great club. Thursday, November 15th through that Saturday. More dates and tickets on the site. Go to GregFitzsimmons.com. Greg, you want to play the Rotten Tomatoes game with us?
Been dying to play. Can't wait.
Let's do it.
Listen to that noise. It's a high falsetto voice. It can only mean one thing, and you can feel it.
Got some names of flicks. And the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh.
If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus five.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
All right, the theme is, Dawson.
Well, over 160 long, boring games of baseball have been played, but here's the good news. There are plenty more to come. Mm-hmm. We're in Gwoctober, so it's time for the baseball playoffs and a baseball-themed round of the Rotten Tomatoes game. First up, Clint Eastwood directs and stars in this film. His job as a scout for the Braves is in jeopardy, and the only one who can save him is Amy Adams. In 2012's Trouble with the Curve.
Anyone see this?
No. I'd see bits and pieces of it. I think it wasn't great, but it was sort of nice, and it just didn't work. But we don't know how bad it was.
Justin Timberlake was in it.
Oh, Justin Timberlake was in it. That's right. All right, let's all lock in our number and. Greg Fitzdog, how say you?
Well, baseball movies, it's all American. You can't hate it. It's like it's like not liking a gay movie or something about slavery or the Holocaust. So
all American.
And Clint Eastwood is the most all American of actors besides Tom Hanks. So as an American, I'm gonna go 89%.
Wow.
Okay. Seems extraordinarily high. And remember, there's a Clint Eastwood rating before the RNC talking to an empty chair. And then there's a post rating for Clint Eastwood after talking to the empty stool. So you got to factor that in. I think this was pre-empty stool conversation.
Feels like it.
I went not fresh, but almost at 57%.
That's exactly what I have, 57%.
Right, you and I have been doing a lot of simpatico lately.
I went for the same reason, but slightly higher, 61.
Trouble with the Curve is rotten.
Oh.
At 51%.
Oh.
All right. We move on.
It looks like a 7, but it's a 1.
I think I'm out of the entire game.
No, you're not.
You can get back in there. There's plenty of time.
Plenty of room.
Next up, the first black superhero plays the first black baseball superhero. In 2013's 42, Chadwick Boseman as Jackie Robinson in 42.
I sort of like sports movies, was thinking about seeing this movie, and then started hearing stuff not great. And this is one of those movies I think the critics and the people kind of root for just because of the theme. And when I don't hear great things about movies people are pulling for, it makes me a little nervous. Did you see it, Brian?
I fucking hated this movie. It's wow. It's one of my all-time least favorite movies. I mean, wow. Bottom 10.
Why? How could that be?
It's pandering. It's historically inaccurate. It's glossy. The pandering thing was the worst part, but it sort of, I understand what you have to do with biopics. Sometimes you have to condense things, but this just makes a cartoonish villains. Dawson's doppelganger, Alan Tudyk's in it, is like, hey, N-word, hey, I'm sure that happened. It was just so cartoonish. It was so over the top and so silly.
Well, all right. So now we're at this place, which is, if all things are, you know, If all things are equal, this might be 20%. But again, the critics root for the historical thing, absolutely, and the overcoming the race thing and that, all that kind of stuff. So you have to sort of put a little creatine in it.
At the risk of giving things away, I will simply say that I remember at the time when it came out hating it and then looking up the score and being outraged.
Okay.
So right. That could be 50%. I all I remember is the score was significantly higher.
Oddly
than I
enough, though, I saw this. I don't remember hating it that much, but the Chadwick Boseman biopic that I did hate, the James Brown one.
I heard that wasn't good, too.
It was pretty terrible.
All right. Well, if you were outraged, I'm going to go 72.
Oh,
fair. Okay. Fitzdog?
Sorry.
I got to say, you know, to me, these movies are great. Whenever it's the Harrison Ford, I remember the Harrison Ford character. It was one of these, like, you know, you've got the magical Negro character that always saves the day for the hapless white people. And Harrison Ford was sort of the inverse of this.
Yes.
He was the magical white guy that saved the day for Jackie Robinson. So on that alone, I got to give it an 84.
Wow.
Exactly what I've written down, 84.
Wow. Really?
Right there?
Really?
Adam, what did you say?
I said 72.
I had 71.
42 is certified fresh.
Shit.
79.
All right.
So this is one
this
of
so right,
but this is
Fitzhugh,
one of those examples of affirmative action,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's just going, this movie wasn't as good as the critics thought it was. Although the audience has it at 85, so maybe all bets are off.
It's a bit of a crowd pleaser for dumb people.
Okay.
That's not me.
Our next movie has the most epic music of any baseball movie ever. Possibly the most epic music of any movie ever.
Randy Newman did the score.
And not John Williams.
Yeah. Robert Redford, Robert Duvall, Glenn Close, Kim Basinger, and a whole bunch more in 1984's The Natural.
We were
owner of this on DVD.
Yeah. I've watched, I don't know if I've started it and ended it. I've seen the whole movie in bits and pieces. I know the critics love this one, but how much?
Mm. At 1984, it could be considered a classic now, which I think bumps it up a little too.
Fitzdog, how say you?
Well, I remember. Wait, who was the female lead that he liked?
It was Glenn Close.
Oh, Glenn Close, right. I just remember that they gave it that. Remember in these movies that they would make back in the 80s, it was always like they would put Vaseline on the lens to make the woman like look softer and more like angelic, and I remember she was glowing. They're still trying to get the instruments cleaned from that movie. I liked it. I thought it was great. I'm gonna go with 87.
Close. I have 86. I think it's become a classic in retrospect. At the time, it was just kind of, you know, respected.
I went 91.
I went 90.
The Natural is fresh. At 82.
Wow. Critics not as enamored as I thought.
Who plays Max Mercy? The Duvall. This is a great movie.
Why?
Wilford Brimley is the coach.
Why low 80?
It was based on a very popular novel from back in the day. And
Bernard Malamud.
Which I read. It ends very differently, spoiler alert. I think it was looked as a little lightweight, a little bit glossy.
Oh, they're comparing it to the novel.
Yeah.
Right.
It was, you know.
Yeah. What was the movie, like Van Wilder 2? junior college or bust or something. There's some part two thing that's like 88.
I don't know.
That we did a couple.
Was it waiting to?
No. I think I was in that.
Still waiting?
Still haven't seen it. We did a like whatever two movie that was horrible. I had like a Weekend at Bernie's or something that got like an 88. Like I didn't think it was a Lampoon movie or something.
Could have been Bernie.
Something. It wasn't that. But it now.
It haunts you.
It was two games ago, I think, or so. Max Paddle.
In this movie, Roy Hobbs, Redford's character, gets his shot. He rides the bench, right? Because he's like 38 years old, and I'm not playing 30-year-old rookie. And he gets his shot because Michael Madsen kills himself. Accidentally.
Oh, top critics at 63 in The Natural, by the way.
Yeah, I think it was looked as lightweight.
Like, Scream 2, 81%. Why do we have units of measurement?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe Scream 2 was great for a horror movie. I don't remember it at all.
All right.
At all.
Does anyone want to live in that world where Scream 2 is outranking?
By almost 20 points.
Nev Campbell outranks Robert Redford.
All right. It's anyone's game as we head into the championship rounds.
Robert De Niro plays an insane person who loves baseball. Now, he's not insane because he loves baseball. He's insane because he's obsessed with the Giants and kills the team rivals. 1996's The Fan.
I do not remember this.
This is such an absurd movie. They play the final. Oh, forget it. It's so
what?
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
The final scene happens in a monsoon on the field. On the field.
All I remember is, as an American, this is my greatest moment. I have probably three watershed moments in my life.
Okay.
Driving off a tow truck.
Yep.
After a Man Show rap party. Being escorted out of a driving range, a golf ball drive, and just told I have to leave now from a driving range. And when we were playing, totally topical TiVo trivia, playing this game, the first word was a knife salesman, and I yelled my name, and I said, "The Fan."
Right.
And, because in the TV, all I remember from this movie is De Niro sold knives.
Yep. This was the movie where Benicio del Toro plays the other star on the team. It's the Giants, and Wesley Snipes is like their Barry Bonds. And Benicio won't give up his number, right, to his jersey number to Wesley Snipes. And Wesley goes into a slump, and De Niro, being a crazed fan, thinks it's because he won't give up the number. So he kills Benicio del Toro in a sauna.
There was a whole... Sort of.
This is the Con Air of worst movies.
But there was a lot of those movies where the fans kidnap the star player. Mm-hmm. Dude, like there's a whole group of 80s, 90s movies where that somehow the fans got in and got hold of the star players. Okay.
This is a terrible movie.
It's a terrible movie, but is it 29 or is it 49?
Anyone who enjoys this ironically. You know what I mean? Like guilty pleasure.
But are we into the teens? Are we into the 40s?
Here's what takes it down to below where you think it is. Two words. John Leguizamo in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think film cancer. Has he ever had a movie that did well? And he's been given a lot of shots at the plate.
Mm. Got a little movie called John Wick for you, my brother.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Didn't see it.
It's hard to give horrible things to De Niro movies, but people couldn't have liked it. 37.
I went a little higher at 50.
26.
29.
The Fan is rotten at 36.
Right.
Ooh.
30. Oh, wait. It says 34. Damn it.
Oh.
Could he use those two points?
I'll take it.
All right. Well, I think it is now anyone's ball game as we go to the last one. Should have listened to your own verbiage.
Because baseball is so boring, these guys that attack on another sport just to make it palpable. From the minds that brought you South Park, 1998's Basketball.
Oh, yeah.
I never get why these movies are allowed to be made.
Oh, they were riding high off of South Park.
I know.
Giving the keys to the kingdom.
All right. So, like, not good, but...
Who was the chick in this movie? You remember?
I couldn't tell you.
Holly. What's her name?
Lauren Holly?
Lauren Holly.
Huh?
I don't know. She seemed like, it seems like she's in her prime.
This feels like
Lauren Holly. All right. Well, this is tough because, again, as previously stated, it's really anyone's game at this point. And we don't know if sometimes critics like these things and give it a pleasant 72.
It's ironic.
And other times, no.
These the girls are Yasmin Bleeth and Jenny McCarthy.
Yes. Okay. Which put together is one Lauren Holly.
That's right.
These guys were hailed as geniuses at the time. Like they were riding as high as you can get.
Right. All right. I've locked it in.
No, I haven't. One second.
I remember it having a Winnebago in it. And to me, that's a whole genre of films as well. The Winnebago movies. I remember not liking it at all. I'm going to go. Is it time?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. I'm going to go 27.
Bold, because that would get you probably the victory if I said 51, which I am saying.
Oh, you are saying 51.
Wow. I'm saying 51.
All right, I'm close to you. I said 44.
I said 29.
Basketball is rotten. At 42.
Oh, what? No way.
Oh,
and the audience at 74?
Very tough.
That's insane.
What'd you do, Brian?
44.
44.
Oh, come on.
All right, but I wasn't too far off that one either. Ooh. This is, Gina's out. This between me and Brian, I've decided, and I've decided it's very close.
If I win, can I decide who gets fired?
Yes.
In the battle for third place, it's a good thing Fitz is not in the studio because he will not be on the podium. Greg Fitzsimmons, 68 is your score.
Not a bad score.
No, not bad.
Followed by Gina Gray.
I'm naked.
Gina bested Greg by 21 points.
Oh, my
Gina,
God.
47.
Whoa, this is a low-scoring game.
That's a good score.
Leaving Brian and Adam neck and neck. Bald Brian with a score of 33.
Respectable. Jose Canseco.
Adam Carolla. That was a hell of a match, my boss. Your score is 34 for second place.
Oh, damn it! What victory!
Wow.
Oh, that's good stuff.
All in the last one.
What a great game.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Wow.
You know,
have you had a one-point game before?
It's been a while. Wow. I had the sense it was exquisitely close, and at least I'll take that moral victory. Fitzdog,
I'll
by the way.
I'll take the victory because, let's be honest, I'm sitting in a hotel room with a laptop. I could have gotten a zero on this.
Negative 25?
Game.
Actually, negative 25 because if you get it right on, we do a five-point deduction.
Oh.
Fitzdog doing shows all over the place. Go to GregFitzsimmons.com and find out where this amazing stand-up comedian is going to be performing in a town near you. Thanks, Fitzdog.
Thanks, everybody. Good talking to you.
Bye.
All right, let me tell you about one point and made it all on that last one.
You're not going to be able to sleep tonight.
Castrol Edge.
He's forgotten about it.
Friction. Viscosity to break down. Rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance of up to 10%. Let's not go down that road. Your car deserves the best. It deserves 100% pure synthetic Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to get stronger under pressure, helps fight friction, and deliver maximum levels of performance for your car. Three times.
Three times, fool.
Three times stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading synthetic oils. We use it here. You should use it there. We put it in the dually. The truck's got to work the hardest. Hauling that rig up the grapevine, you got to have the performance of Castrol Edge in that bad boy. Castrol Edge, unlock the true performance in your car's engine. Castrol Edge. All right, well, sticking with the movie theme, you are going to do a Baldywood?
Yeah, man. A Baldywood on Fahrenheit 11-9.
Mm-hmm.
Want to hear it?
Let's get to it.
Hooray for Baldywood. He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen upon the big screen or in his Netflix queue.
Before you spin bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Bollywood!
Fahrenheit 11/9 is the new documentary by Michael Moore. We all know Michael, yeah.
Sorry, Max Pata, pull up the Michael Moore data I was telling you to pull up. We've talked about in the past. Yes? No? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Get it.
Go ahead.
Michael Moore, documentarian. He, of course, made Roger and Me, burst onto the scene with Roger and Me. Bowling for Columbine, Oscar winner for best documentary. And, of course, Fahrenheit 9/11, at the time, the highest grossing documentary of all time. It's one of the most profitable films ever made. 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. This one, Fahrenheit 11/9, currently sitting at 77%, pulled in about $5 million at the box office. So not quite the raging success that the others have been. But here we are. Now, I can... Now, Gina saw it.
Yep.
Okay, good. So you can help out here. I can see, Adam, a lot of people prejudging their interest in this movie. You know what I mean? Like, I saw a trailer, and as soon as I even just saw what it was, like, well, I know what this is going to be. I know what avenues this will go down. I was convinced, you know. I think it's natural to assume. Michael Moore is a very outspoken liberal, makes films... espousing his point of view on a number of different topics. I will say this. Of course, it's very critical of Trump and conservatives. It's a Michael Moore documentary, after all. But it takes plenty of shots at Obama, Clinton, the Democratic Party, especially.
Specifically, because he takes plenty of shots at the establishment, and they're all in the same category as far as he's concerned.
Yeah, I would not call it even-handed. That's impossible for a Michael Moore movie. But this was surprisingly even-handed. I'll also say this. There was a shockingly little amount dedicated to Donald Trump. This is a 2-hour movie. I would say 15 to 20 minutes maybe is like directly about Donald Trump and his administration. A good third of the movie is about the Flint water crisis.
Right.
My hunch, I don't know if you felt this way, Gina, my hunch was like after about, you know, minute 40 of the Flint water crisis, I'm like, oh, he clearly just wanted to make a movie about the Flint water crisis, and you can't get distribution for a movie like that. Like, no one's gonna be like, oh, we got to, you know, this doc. No one's excited about that.
Right.
But if you say, hey, I want to make this about, you know, the Trump administration,
strategic
people are, you know, Michael Moore movie
and
about
how,
Trump
and how he could be tied to the Flint water crisis.
It's tangential. Yes. It's very tangential, but he makes the connection. You're welcome to, you know, agree with it or not. That said, obviously the stuff that's going on in Flint and has gone on with their water is outrageous, and he makes the case that it's a crime, and I'm inclined to believe him. It's unbelievable what's happened out there and how long it's gone on. But
wouldn't,
that's a good.
Wouldn't the world be a happier place if Michael Moore was born in Boulder, Colorado, and then I wouldn't have to hear him on Mar every other week just crying. Going, there's people to be boys out there. The federal government's done to the Army Corps of Engineers. Like, if he just was from Boulder, Colorado, we'd
life's
be doing,
good, man.
Hey, ever been up to Red Rocks? It's awesome.
Weed's
I saw
legal.
Blues Traveler there 2 summers ago. Fucking awesome.
Yeah, I can see how it would get a, what's that?
No, I was going to say, when you make a movie, you have to make a movie poster. Mm-hmm. When you make a movie poster, you can't really take a picture of a buffet. You have to kind of pick a dish. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you have to have him in front of the White House saying, you know, Trump's a racist and hitting a golf ball into the White House and it blowing up stuff. Because somebody said, you need to pick a... we can't confuse people with this potpourri
you can't
of,
be holding
different,
a cup of dirty
different
water.
Ideas.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And by the way, I think there's another movie right now called Flint.
Oh, is there?
Yeah,
oh,
so
you know that.
There's a little boost.
That's, we're looking at the poster now, and it's obvious what everyone would expect this to be. So the Rotten Tomatoes score is interesting to me at 77%, because I think – so Michael Moore is – regardless of what you think of his politics, is objectively a good filmmaker. He makes compelling films. His movies are interesting, good, well-made. That is...
Roger and Me was a funny movie.
Yes, and a landmark documentary in that it got over to the public sphere.
Right, and according to Donald Trump himself, he enjoyed it very much.
Funny you should mention that, Gina. So yes, there is, he, of course, Michael Moore does not get Donald Trump on camera to interview him. That would be absurd and impossible. But he does show a very interesting clip from Roseanne Barr's talk show. Remember Roseanne Barr had a talk show, Adam, back in probably the late 80s, I'm guessing?
It looks like it's in the boathouse in Central Park.
So he pulls up a clip where Donald Trump was the lead guest on Roseanne Barr's talk show. And here is Roseanne bringing out her second guest with Donald Trump still sitting there. Here she is bringing out her second guest.
My next guest is kind of the philosophical polar opposite of Donald Trump, I think, but maybe not. We'll find out. His first film was the classic documentary Roger and Me, which was so great. Please welcome my blue-collar panelist, Michael Moore.
He's terrific, I tell you. I loved what he did. Oh. If I was Roger, I wouldn't have liked it, but I enjoyed it. I hope he never does one on me, though.
Simpler times.
And here we are.
Yeah.
Ironic to have that clip in a documentary about him, of course.
Wow.
So here we are. So the Rotten Tomatoes score is interesting to me because I think this is objectively an above average. It's a well-made movie, and it's maybe 3 out of 5 stars for me, but it's pretty good. It's not his best by far. I wonder if it's getting a boost because it's Michael Moore and appeals to a lot of what the critics probably agree with ideologically. Or, as we all know, let's say we're arguing with a spouse or a loved one, it behooves you every once in a while to really not give in. What's the word I'm looking for? To really acknowledge when you're wrong, to really sort of
acquiesce?
Yeah, really. Like, if you get one wrong, you better really own up to it because it's going to help you in your next argument. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yes.
Oh, I really screwed the boots on
that. Yes, yeah, boosts yes. your credibility.
Yes. Yes. It's hold back a fake orgasm
That's
every once
right.
in a while. It's almost
Precise.
That. And then no one accuses you of being a team guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So wait a minute. The Rotten Tomatoes score on this is
77.
For the critics.
And honestly, that feels about right. It's an above average movie. It's not great. It's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. If there's a fault with it, each story is compelling. Like, they spent a lot of time on the Parkland shooting, and they spent a lot of time on the teacher strike in West Virginia. It's all these stories are compelling, but it lacks a narrative. Like, the through line is
that's,
Trump,
yes.
and that's tangential at best. Like,
agreed.
It didn't feel neither here nor there. Honestly, I rarely say this. This should have been a miniseries on Netflix or Amazon. This should have been a 5-part series, one part on the teacher strike, one part on the Parkland
sense.
Shooting, one part on the Flint water crisis, maybe 2 parts. But you know
it
what I mean?
It was multiple stories in one
movie.
It
was all over the place.
Yeah.
And each part was compelling, but it wasn't a overall, you know, well-told story, I guess, narrative. Like, Bowling for Columbine was a masterpiece. For 9/11 was interesting from start to finish because it told a story.
But were there things, because sometimes you think, oh, Michael Morgan, we know, we get it. Mm. But in this case, were there things that truly shocked you at this point, seeing all the Michael Moore movies? Because I was actually – maybe I just need to be better informed. But when it came to some of the specific – the Flint stuff and the Obama stuff, I was like, shit.
Yeah.
That's pretty evil.
Yes, but – I was also annoyed because at this point, Michael Moore is a bit of a parody of himself. And he's been lapped by the Sacha Baron Cohens of the world. Like, there's some typical Michael Moore stunts in this movie. Like, hey, you're going to find it shocking. But Michael Moore takes a glass of Flint water and tries to get, you know, an official
to
drink
it.
Like, and at one point, he pulls up in front of the governor's mansion with a tanker full of water and, like, sprays down, you know, the water.
Right.
And it's like, all right, you're doing what someone would do a bad impression of Michael Moore. Like,
and
we don't need
But he
this.
Seems aware of it at this point. I mean, with the Kellyanne Conway stuff, it's like he's aware of the cartoon that he is. He has to be at this point.
Yeah, he must be. He knows that he's a figure and he's hated by some and loved by others. Yeah. It paints a fairly bleak vision of the future. I didn't leave the movie feeling happy about the world. I wouldn't rush out and see this. This is a solid rental. You can do a lot worse once it pops up on your Netflix queue.
Hooray for Bollywood!
Quick question. When do you think, if it hasn't already, the Parkland kids story is going to be optioned? Because that's a movie.
That was a compelling part of this, yeah.
Do you think those kids have already sold the rights to their story to anybody?
They're probably going to write
kid,
a book.
That kid, LaBeef, the main kid.
Hog.
Huh?
Hog. David Hogg.
Hog LaBeef.
Hog LaBeef, yeah.
That kid.
Hog LaBeef. That's like a villain in a Muppets movie.
By the way, the Hog LaBeef, that part where This is how my brain now works. I'm just putting everything into one fucking Cuisinart and going for it. You know what I mean? Okay. Hog the beef. The worst part about where we are as a society is all the 57 and 64-year-old adults going, those kids know more than we'll ever know and are more courageous. Yeah. Okay. Do you really think that about high schoolers?
Do you want them to do your taxes?
Or are you just trying to fucking ride some wave of some Bob McAllister wave of kids are people too or some bullshit like that? It drives me nuts when any politician who formerly never said anything about kids ever just all now jump in and go, they know more than we know about any of this stuff.
It's like, we should see their grades in pre-calculus before we say that.
Well, yes. At least the way they're painted and the things that he says that they've organized, they do seem to be extraordinary. Like, they're not us. They weren't us in high school.
They still don't know shit.
Oh, totally. I'm just saying they're
still big ball
they're better
of,
than
they're
I
still
was.
A big ball of feelings. Well, everyone is better than you were. Oh, all right, anyway, that Hog the Beef guy's got a future in politics. There's no doubt about it. And
vote the beef.
I'm always amazed at how composed like 17-year-olds are. Like they go, hey, I'm going on Tucker Carlson tonight. They just sit there. I couldn't go 6 minutes without reaching for a booger, like on camera, like when I was 16, or without using the word "durr."
At one point, one of the, I think the girl is shown in front of, you know, 10,000 people at a rally or whatever. She's reading off the list of her friends who were victims and like, we'll never get cake with Caitlin again, whatever. And I'm getting more choked up than she is. I'm like, I wouldn't do well at this. She's doing extremely well reading off a list of her dead friends.
Yeah. And at some point, if we were talking about, like, if I were that age, I was being interviewed, and I was talking about, someone brought up, what do you think about Charlton Heston's legacy? I'd be like, that douche? Like, I could never be as composed as those guys. That being said, all credit to Hog the Beef. I don't like the politicians who jump on the Hog the Beef bandwagon on mile 10 and go, these kids know it all. Like, of course, old guy trying to backtrack and figure out new ways to get votes. All right. This movie it's funny. I was looking up. I have my Rotten Tomatoes algorithm. The Rotten Tomatoes algorithm for Michael Moore movies is critics are always higher than audience. In his movies. And this one was a big drop between the critics in the 77 and 57 is a pretty sizable drop in the audience. I'm guessing the audience wanted to see him. You wouldn't have gone to this movie unless you wanted to see him tear Trump a new asshole. And if he didn't, because he didn't tear Trump, so people showed up.
I can see that people being disappointed.
Folks from the right didn't show up and go, well, you know, I've disagreed with Michael Moore in the past, but I saw him on Mar. Let's give him a shot.
He has a few good points.
His core showed up and said, oh, this is going to be great. 2 hours of him destroying Trump. He dedicates 15 minutes to destroying Trump and kicks Obama in the shins. And these people go, fuck it, 57 now. We didn't get what we wanted out of him. I'm guessing.
That is completely reasonable.
All right. Let's see. I got... it was funny because somebody tweeted me a long time ago, 7 weeks ago, and said, like, who's, you know, the separation between the critics and the whatever. So I said, well, I bet you Dinesh D'Souza's got the biggest gap in there for a bunch of reasons, some legitimate. I pulled up his movie, Death of a Nation, Hillary's America, and America, Imagine a World Without Her. He's got 0% from the critics on Death of a Nation, 90 with the audience.
Oh, wow.
He's got 4% on Hillary's America, 80 with the audience, and then he's got 8 with the critics, 0 with the top critics, and 84 with the audience. So we're getting pulled in different directions here, and I think we're just going further and faster in that direction.
Well, like you just said with Michael Moore, his fans are showing... to see the movie. I imagine Dinesh's fans are showing up to see their movie too, and he delivers on the 90 minutes of kicking Hillary in the shins and, you know, laying off whoever. He's doing the opposite of what Michael Moore is doing, and he's playing to his fans, and I'm sure they're loving it. You know, I'm sure they're giving
it the difference is the critics who don't like the kicking Hillary in the shins. All right, let me tell you about LifeLock. You've probably heard by now. Hackers exploited a security vulnerability at Facebook, potentially exposing personal information for nearly 50 million accounts. With your personal info, criminals can open accounts, file tax returns, and buy property or do God knows what. And once your stuff gets hacked into and that bell gets rung, it's so hard to unring it. There's so many threats in today's connected world. It just takes one weak link for criminals to get in. New LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against threats to your identity and devices you can't easily see or fix on your own. It's 2018, folks. Let's get some LifeLock. Let's protect our identity. Let's not get hacked. Dawson, LifeLock.
No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. The new LifeLock with Norton Security can see threats you might miss on your own. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code Adam for an extra 10% off your first year, plus a $25 Amazon gift card with annual enrollment. That's promo code Adam. Terms apply.
Yes.
Actually, can I forgot. I was going to mention this before the show, but do can I give a quick plug and a thank you?
Mm-hmm.
The other day when Brian and I sat in here and did our show, we talked about the charity that I'm doing for the Children's Hospital, and people are coming out in droves to send stuff to the kids. I am so blown away. I cannot thank you enough. If you don't know what I'm talking about, or you missed the show, or you skipped that part, just go to the top of my Twitter feed. It's pinned. All the information's there. It's through the Art of Elysium. It's for the Children's Hospital. It's kids who are patients of the plastic surgery ward, and they do a self-esteem camp, and
I'm not paying for their new boobs.
And it's awesome, and they walk away with these goodie bags thanks to you. You helped do this. They walk away with awesome stuff. All the money that the families have, a lot of it that goes to this kid. They don't have a lot of extra for the kid, for the sibling, for anybody. So the fact that you guys have really kicked in, gone through our Amazon link here, and sent stuff to the organization, I cannot thank you enough. You can still get in on it. Just go to @GinaGrad. It's the very top of my Twitter page.
We have great listeners, and I appreciate you guys for all that you do. Okay, quick break. Good sports, and I got Dr. Drew related homeless scary story to get in, and some other scary stuff to get into right after this.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
Hey, it's Eric Stromer.
Hey, it's kind of my thing.
Hey, I'm going to... All right, sorry. Hi, I'm Eric Stromer.
Let's not live in the past. You should listen to Ace on the House, because me and Stromer dispense building advice every Saturday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
I might even go as far as to say professional building advice.
Hey, get me some coffee.
There you go. Here I go. I'm running.
Ace on the House, every Saturday on Corolla Digital. Download now at adamcarolla.com, the Podcast One app, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Ace on the House.
Good sports. It's time for a sports segment. Good sports. It's time for Ace and Dave. Good sports. It's time to get it started.
NFL highlights. Mixed martial arts fights.
Riffing on bad Stallone movies. Raking the fruits of the year. Dave's recapping hockey.
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new week of hot sports talk here on Good Sports, presented by Podcast One Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carolla over there. Ace, how are you?
Well, my friend.
Are you good? I'm glad to hear it. And we could jump in on any number of sports issues and game of life issues. But I want to harken back to something that I was just talking about. Remember about 25 years ago, here was a weird phenomenon. Racquetball. Did that happen to you? Did that reach you in the San Fernando Valley in the early-ish 80s or whatever?
Well, not only did it reach me in the San Fernando Valley, because we had a number of racquetball courts open up here, but the only time I ever walked off of a job was working on a racquetball court.
Huh.
The destruction of a racquetball court. But it's the only time in my construction history where I just said, too much, too dangerous, too dirty. I need to be transferred to another job or I'm leaving. So I'm intimately aware of racquetball courts, how popular they were. It was a club thing.
It was a weird spike, though. And like I say, I can't think of any equivalent in the span of my lifetime in a, of a sport that just sort of, I mean, there was, I think, if I recall correctly, I think there was actually like professional racquetball.
Oh, there was.
I don't remember it ever even making it to ESPN, though. It was too below the radar. And at a time when ESPN would take Australian rules football, that rose to the level of interest, but racquetball did not. Maybe that scuttled it for greater growth in the U.S. of A.
Yes, famously chronicled in the movie Splash.
That's right. That's one of the great scenes in one of the most underrated comedies. John Candy, perhaps his finest role even.
Hit himself in the head with the racquetball.
Good memory.
It was, they would use it as a vehicle in like 80s movies where the dad would be like, well, son, you want to marry my daughter? Yes, I do, sir. Well, meet me at the club on Thursday. Let's play a little racquetball.
He's a killer on the court.
Somehow that would be used as some way to
You've done enough
emotion.
TV. You can figure out why. Because the fourth wall is both competitors are facing the same direction. It's perfectly made for TV.
Yes, it's cropped perfectly.
Right.
And then at some point, because they had the big Lucite wall in the back, you could have that scene where the exhausted guy hit it and then dragged down it, cheek dragging down the Lucite, and you could film it right there.
That's so right. You mentioned working construction on it. How do you get those things into a building? How do you transport that giant piece of glass or Lucite or whatever and put it up there as a wall? That must be a...
It's modular. It probably comes in pieces the same way you do like a big glass facade in front of a building or something like that. I was tasked with demoing a racquetball court, which is the worst thing you could ever do in construction or in life. Like, I would have much rather been a slave on a Viking ship with a guy wearing a leather vest and just cracking a whip, or another guy beating a drum. That would have been a step up from the gig of demoing a racquetball court.
Now that's a good list. Worst jobs in the history of people. And I think being one of the rowers on a Viking ship would have to be high up there on the list.
I've done carpet cleaning.
Carpet cleaning
is
Viking ships, rower.
Racquetball destruction.
You've done two of the top three in man's recorded history.
Absolutely.
Isn't it weird? Was there anything? I mean, there was a time when we were promised about 10 years or so ago, whether you like it or not, NASCAR is now the fifth sport. And it just never kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
But racquetball had that weird thing where everybody kind of my age, I was as a little kid, like my friends all played racquetball. I couldn't tell you one person. I don't think anybody I know. Is it still happen? Do people still play racquetball in 2018?
Well, the first thing they do is they have to graft on a lot of reasons why it's super healthy. It's great because it works your quick twitch muscles. You know what I mean? It also works your endurance muscles. You have to be on your toes, reflexes. It works eye-hand coordination. Like, they tell you all the stuff. It works. I would argue that being chased by a bear works about the same muscles. But they tell you about how good it is.
When people move into those unasked for rationalizations, you know that it ain't right. It's the same thing as the guys who wear speciously fashionable kind of pants, or like, you ever see the guy who wears wrestling shoes around?
Yes.
And it's weird, and and he realizes that you think it's weird, and you're like, what's up with the wrestling shoes? He has to explain it beyond just that he thinks that they look good, because so he'll give you the move like, they're just so comfortable. You know, I wear them because I got them for $5. I had to buy them. You know what? They pay me to wear these shoes, kind of thing. Like, that's the same.
Well, racquetball. So the thing that made the destruction of the racquetball court the most miserable job in the world is it was in the Valley, in the San Fernando Valley, It had, remember racquetball courts, it have a divider between the two courts, and you could sit up top and sort of view down like the old guys in the Muppet Show.
The framers of the sport of racquetball were overly optimistic because they, you're right, they all came with like built-in arenas. Like, because people are going to turn out to...
Yeah, well, anytime you got a guy who looks like Ed Asner wearing dolphin shorts pulled up real tight, you're going to want to stare at his ass for
hours.
Did you
see that Thursday night matchup we got tonight? Well, I got something better for you. Terry and Carl are getting it on the racquetball court number three. Let's go down there and watch.
Yeah, was always it was kind of an older dude sport, and they would have this sort of balcony up top that you could look down at it at, and then there's the floor level where you could look through the giant sneeze guard at the salad bar at them as well. When you tear down a racquetball court, the wall that separates the two courts is made of concrete block that has been filled with rebar and cement. So it's a hollow block that gets filled with rebar and cement.
Oh, man.
And then it gets clad with this like 1.25-inch thick particle board on each side of it. In order to take it down, you must first shore up the ceiling because it's barren.
Oh, it, right.
The ceiling will land on you. You have to shore up the ceiling. Then you have to put up a bunch of scaffolding, and you have to lay on the with your back against the ceiling at the top. You have to start at the top, and you
have
to get a jackhammer, and you have to jackhammer out the wall while laying on your belly at the top of the scaffolding 23 feet above the floor.
That's insane.
It's dangerous.
Why do we hear of more?
It's insane.
I never have heard of a racquetball-related death, though.
I'll tell you why.
Tell.
They take the disenfranchised, the poor people, the brown people, the jobs. You know, they talk about jobs that Rich Whitey won't do, and they're always talking about who's going to pick your lettuce, who's going to pick your strawberries, who's going to scrub your toilets. Who's going to demolish your racquetball courts? They never say that part, but they should.
Thank you for bringing in bringing some attention to this very serious matter.
Somebody had to.
Thank you for being courageous enough to be that person.
And that somebody's me.
I'm telling you, there's a feature film in this character.
All right, let me tell you about betonline.ag. NFL, college football, and the biggest UFC fight of the year. It's all happening. Well, it's a sports fan's dream. Let's not wait any longer to make your online wager. Head on over to betonline.ag. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code podcast1 and receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. That's podcast1 and get a 50% sign-up bonus today. Put it toward your next wager. How about the biggest fight of the year? How about Conor McGregor and Khabib? No, sorry, Habib. The K is silent, by the way. It doesn't do Khabib. It's Habib.
Habib! I love it either way.
We're going to Madoff. I'll just say it fast. October 6th coming up. That's this weekend. Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena. Boy, what a fight. You don't want to miss out on all this action. McGregor, NFL, college football, all there. BetOnline.ag, our exclusive partners of Podcast One. Sportsnet.
Dynamite is how I would take down a racquetball court. And also, kudos on that good read. More good sports for you tomorrow. In the meantime, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damaschek, Podcast One Sports out. Good sports.